Right, why don't we get started then? Hi everyone, I'm Jakub Szymaszek. I am Program Manager in the Azure SQL Database team. So the topic of the session for this late afternoon is the dilemma that many of us face in our organizations. It's the conflict between data transparency and data security. Okay, so on one side, we are asked on a regular basis every day to make our businesses driven by data, okay? Which requires us that we are able to freely share sometimes very sensitive business information with our coworkers, IT staff, internally within our organizations, and perhaps customers or partners externally, okay? So the problem is that when we do that, we expose ourselves to sensitive data theft, to a risk of sensitive information leaking to unauthorized users, such as competitors, governments, or simply criminals, right? So now the topic of this discussion is the case study that illustrates how to effectively tackle this dilemma, this conflict. This is a story from the company named Financial Fabric. They are a provider of a multi-tenant service entirely hosted in Azure. As you will see, the service stores and processes extremely sensitive financial information, and you will see what the Financial Fabric does to secure the data and to confidently store it in the cloud using built-in existing Azure security technologies, particularly always encrypted in Azure SQL Database. So without further delay, let me introduce and hand it over to Subra Bose and Paul Sturpy from Financial Fabric.
Thank you, Jakub. Hello, everyone. So we are going to cover, as Jakub said, data security and data privacy in financial services. How many of you have heard about Panama Papers in the room? Oh, everyone, almost everyone. That's great.
You've read the title.
So you probably know, April 2016, roughly 11.5 million documents and 2.5 terabytes of data was breached or leaked from a law firm in Panama, which had information about 140 world leaders, including heads of the states, such as David Cameron's information. As a result, the Prime Minister of Iceland had to resign. There were very, very deep financial, social, and economic impact because of that. The second one, the second box, talks about SWIFT. It's another news release in February of this year, where you probably know SWIFT connects worldwide banks for transactions, settlement, clearance, and SWIFT messages are sent to for interbank settlement particularly. So what happened in February was a SWIFT, so they send about 25 million messages every day, so that's the daily volume. You can imagine the breach or hack of that network can have very, very deep financial impact. So February of this year, $950 million transfer instruction from the Central Bank of Bangladesh's account at Reserve Bank of New York was breached or was hacked. They stopped the transaction finally, but these are some of the examples which are happening now. I mean, every other week you see something. The third box in the slide, which talks about cybersecurity of hedge fund data, that will be our focus today. So hedge funds or investment managers in alternatives, wealth managers, they manage money from individuals as well as institutional investors. They manage trillions of dollars. Roughly in the hedge fund now, they are managing $5 trillion. And we are not talking about big banks. We are talking about small, medium, and large-sized businesses, which are boutique businesses. They are very talented in terms of selecting where to invest your money, presumably, and getting the returns, but not necessarily have a lot of IT infrastructure in terms of securing data. But they do have investment data, meaning where they are investing the money, as well as investor data, i.e., whose account the money is coming from, and the detailed information about the investor, such as the heads of states, different countries, sovereign funds, pension plans, anything. So in this presentation, we are going to talk about the fact that data secrecy and data security is important in financial services. We are not going to talk about whether the legalities or the ethics of the data breach or data security. So as Jakub mentioned, one of the biggest dilemma is data sharing. As we are marching towards 2020, the investment in alternatives is doubling in size. It's becoming from US dollar 8 trillion to 15 trillion, according to PwC. So all of the managers, they are going from institutional quality to industrial strength. You can imagine doubling the volume does not come free. It takes a lot of effort. All of these businesses are becoming data-driven. Data is the key for investment decision-making. So how do you do that? How do you do that without revealing the secrecy or the privacy of the data? So an ideal solution will be being able to share data within and outside of the organization so that the data analyst, data scientist can take a look at it, can make investment decisions, or can figure out trend, but not reveal the secrecy and privacy. So can we do that? Is it even possible? The answer is yes, and that's what we have done working with Microsoft using the Always Encrypted and various Azure platform stack, which you will see in the next few slides. So here in this infographic, you're seeing what we have done, and I'll try to go through some of the elements of it at the business level first, and then Paul will talk through the technical architecture and how it works. We created Data Hub for the investment managers. So as I was telling in the previous slide, investment managers have investment as well as investor side of the data. It resides typically with their service providers, such as prime brokers, fund administrators, their own trading system, their risk management tools, and so on. So even today, the current industry practice is they go to these various service providers' website, or sometimes email, sometimes FTP, download Excel or CSV files, keep it in the network share, and weave together these files to create analytics, which drives the business, whether it is investment decision making, whether it is risk analytics, or investor statement. There are exceptions, of course. The larger funds who have IT staff and infrastructure, they have invested in data warehouses and much more organized. But if you look at the 15,000 managers, most of them don't have that luxury. It's all manual in nature. So we have solved that. What we do is we provide data hub for each one of them. In the data hub, we ingest data such as trades, positions, investor data from different service providers, such as their prime brokers, fund administrators, order management systems, and then we warehouse it, we store it as time series data. We encrypt it using Always Encrypted, which you'd see more as I go through the presentation. And on top of that, we provide analytics where we have used Excel services in SharePoint, and you will see some of that as well in this presentation. So any good architecture or design comes from principles, good principles, or good business goals. So our business goal or our starting point was, we should assume that the data breach will happen. In other words, no matter how good we protect our servers, there can be external breach, there can be internal breach. So we should assume that. So we created an architecture where separation of service account encryption keys, and you will see that in more details, minimize the hacker to be able to get hold of the data. The second principle was we keep the data encrypted as long as possible. Earlier this afternoon in Yahim's presentation, he was talking about in always encrypted, deterministic encryption gives you equality operator, right? So that means while it sounds very simple, oh, we can only do equality check, equality gives us the ability to do pivoting on the data. And you will see some really cool analytics examples where we are able to do the analytics without actually decrypting the data. And the third is we enforce secure authentication policies across the board in terms of getting into the system, meaning your security is only as good as your weakest link, of course. So we employ security at all the layers using different Azure platform services, and you will see that.
So my name is Paul Sturpe. I'm the CTO of Financial Fabric, and I'm going to walk you through our architecture where we have employed this new technology from Microsoft that enables us to securely store private sensitive data on the cloud, which is a huge accomplishment. So as Subra had mentioned, we ingest information from lots of different sources in our Financial Fabric data hub. Fund administrators, prime brokers, custodians, order management systems, websites, OData feeds, all kinds of APIs. And we take that, typically there are files, we take them in all kinds of file formats. There might be CSV, PDF, Excel, of course. And we use and we support many different kinds of protocol types, email, FTP, SFTP. Files may be encrypted when they're ingested, and then we decrypt them. They may be encrypted at the source by the providers, for example. So all that data feeds into what we call our smart ingestion or our smart loader process. We feed it into it, we normalize it, we cleanse it, we normalize it, we put it into our financial-oriented model, which is at the core of the data hub, and immediately it becomes available as the feed to all of the analytics on the front end. So at any point in time, the investment managers see their data accurate, up-to-date, fresh, available at that moment in time, and there's no copies being replicated around or anything like that. And we have different categories of analytics, very rich analytics that are available to them, front office, middle office, even investor relations such as polished end user reports that can be taken from the system, PDFs are generated right from the system, and they can be handed to the end investors just as you receive reports from Vanguard or Fidelity or anything like that. So five years ago, if you walked around and talked to people in the financial services community, there was a tremendous resistance to go to the cloud. This new technology that has been rolled out by Microsoft, I think, is a game changer. Cloud security is fundamentally shifted as of now. And I think that argument has greatly changed. And in the community that we work in, investment managers in financial services who are running hedge funds, their perspective has completely changed. They see the value, they see the lower cost, they see the scalability, they see the flexibility, and with these technologies that we implore in our architecture, I'll show you, they are very comfortable with the architecture, underlying architecture, and storing their data on the cloud. Financial Fabric Data Hub utilizes Microsoft Azure end-to-end. We integrate infrastructure as a service, VMs on Azure, with platform as a service capabilities that are inherent to Microsoft Azure platform. And we're completely fully hosted. We're in multiple regions around the world, And in each region, there's a primary and a DR site, a very traditional architecture, all interconnected with IPsec, VPN tunnels, fully strongly authenticated and encrypted. So we leverage those Microsoft capabilities that are continue to grow and continue to be enhanced, which is fantastic. The infrastructure that they have, the security controls, the operational controls, we completely leverage all of that. But in addition, for the financial services environment or ecosystem that we work in, we layer on top of that our own architecture, which provides additional infrastructure capabilities, additional security controls that are required in the field, the financial services community that we operate in, and additional operational controls that are levied on our staff in order to treat the systems. For example, disaster recovery and BCP are very important in our field, as many other fields in financial services. And for example, we use Microsoft Always On in our database cluster to stream to our DR sides the database transactions in using the always-on technology. For example, we have SharePoint Farms as our front end. We use that for the SharePoint Farms, and you will see that for the storage of the sensitive data in the financial data, we use Azure SQL. So at a high level, our architecture has at the core something called the Smart Loader. The Smart Loader essentially does that ingestion, and this is part of our proprietary secret sauce at Financial Fabric. But what it does is it ingests all these different sources, and as Subra had mentioned earlier, the thing that we want to do is encrypt that data as soon as possible as it comes in. So that's exactly what the Smart Loader does, and it uses a new technology called Always Encrypted, which is built into SQL 2016 and to Azure SQL. So that's it's here, it's available, and it's readily ready for your use. So as the information comes in, we encrypt it using Always Encrypt and store it into Azure SQL for the sensitive financial information as well as not less sensitive information, performance data, things like that. SQL Azure, of course, supports TDE, Transparent Data Encryption. That has been available for a long time. That also provides a foundation of encryption. For example, if backups are encrypted, or the MDF and the LDF files of a database system are encrypted. So these two things together are utilized. Furthermore, what our philosophy and our architecture is to, at the point where we need to show in the web UI or the web portal to the end user the decrypted information, we do that as close as possible to the eyeballs of the end user. So encrypt as soon as the data comes in, and decrypt as close as possible to the point of consumption.
Okay. So this, since Always Encrypted plays a critical role, as you could see and hear in Financial Fabric architecture, let me take a few moments to explain what exactly it is and how it works. So Always Encrypted is an encryption feature available in SQL Server 2016 and Azure SQL Database. And so it's a truly unique technology, and I want to focus on three things which together make it truly unique. So number one is a client-side encryption solution. So what does it mean? It means that the data is encrypted inside a SQL Database client application, which typically is a middle-tier application server, right? So before the application sends the data to the data gets encrypted. After it is retrieved from the database, it gets decrypted. So what are the benefits of it from the security standpoint? Well, that means that the database system, Azure SQL Database in Financial Fabric's case, has never access to sensitive information in plain text or the corresponding keys, which are managed completely on the application side. So even during computations, the sensitive data is never visible in plain text, even in memory of the SQL Server process. Okay, so if a dump file is generated, for example, in a machine hosting SQL Server, all the dump file is going to contain are encrypted values of certain sensitive information. So that's number one. Number two is that despite the fact that the server never operates on plaintext data protected with always encrypted, the database server is able to perform certain computations on encrypted data. So that's what we call queryable encryption, okay? So namely, everything that involves equality comparison can be accomplished on encrypted data because we implemented a flavor of the standard AES-256 encryption algorithm, which we call deterministic encryption. So it basically, it guarantees that the result of encrypting the same plaintext value multiple times always produces the same results. And that enables things like grouping values or point lookups or equality joins. And you will see, and Subra already mentioned that, that this functionality enables analytics they needed to produce dashboards and other views you will see later in Paul's demo. So that's number two. And number three is application transparency. So this encryption decryption is handled transparently by a SQL client driver inside the application. There are minimal changes that typically you need to do in your application. Application is unaware of encryption happening inside a client driver, so there are minimal code changes required.
Yeah, for example, we Financial Fabric did not have to rewrite any of our SQL queries to utilize the technology, so yeah. Zero impact from yeah. the application development perspective, which is fantastic.
Yeah. So let me explain quickly at a high level how it works. I'm happy to point you to other resources that drill down into the details, and also I'm happy to answer any questions during or after the presentation. So one thing I want to mention, Always Encrypted is a column-level encryption technology. So you select individual columns that you believe contain truly sensitive information which you want to protect. So I have an example here. On the right-hand side, you see a table with three columns, right? Two of which are protected with Always Encrypted, name and social security numbers. They contain encrypted values, right? On the left-hand side, there's a client application using ADO.NET. One of the driver in .NET Framework 4.6 or later that supports Always Encrypted. And you see an example of a query. So what this application is trying to do, it's trying to perform basically a point lookup to find a name of a customer with a given social security number. And the application passes that lookup value, social security number, as a plaintext value. Again, Always Encrypted makes encryption transparent, which means the application operates on plaintext values, doesn't deal with encryption. Now, what happens next, the driver intercepts this query and it rewrites it. It rewrites it in such a way that it replaces the plaintext value of the query in the query statement with the ciphertext. Now I could stop here and move to the next step. This is a very complex step, as you can imagine. There is lots of complexity involved. The driver at this point engages typically in a dialogue with the server, which stores the metadata about the encryption to figure out how this SSN plaintext value should be encrypted. So first of all, there is a discovery phase during which the server determines that the SSN parameter in the query corresponds to the column in a database that is encrypted, and then passes the information under the covers to the client that instructs the driver how the SSN value should be encrypted using which algorithm, which keys, and so on. Okay, now we cache all this information to basically make sure that the performance is adequate and so on. So in the newest version of the drivers, these round trips do not happen very often. Okay, so after the server receives that rewritten query, it is able to perform, to evaluate this condition in the workloads due to this deterministic characteristic of encryption that I mentioned. So it will be able to find the matching name in the table And since the name comes from the column that is protected with always encrypted, it will, of course, be retrieved in the encrypted form and passed over to the client application as an encrypted value. And only there, the driver again will transparently decrypt it and return it back to the application, okay? So two security benefits I want to point out here. Number one is, on the client side, only applications and users who have access to the keys, we have two kinds of keys, so to be precise, we're talking here about the master key, which is typically a certificate stored on the client machine. Only applications who have access to that certificate can encrypt or decrypt data stored in columns protected with always encrypted, okay? On the server side, so the main benefit of this feature is that it protects sensitive data from potentially malicious high privilege users in the environment hosting the database, okay? So that includes the DBAs or both on-premises DBAs as well as cloud DBAs, cloud platform administrators, Microsoft employees, right? Or malware running that could be spawned on machines hosting SQL Server and the database containing your sensitive data, and host admins, administrators of machines at both guest and OS level, hosting SQL Server instances, okay? So these are the security benefits, and you'll see exactly how that maps to what Financial Fabric is trying to accomplish soon.
So always encrypted column-level encryption gives us a huge benefit in that now we can share information. Our investment managers can share information with their clients. They can share their information with data scientists, data analysts, our data scientists, and people can work on the data. It enables a data-driven business, which was really not possible before. It's very difficult to share that data because when they share the data, the identifiable information, the sensitive fields, the private fields, are in ciphertext. But yet all the other information that tremendous amount of analytics can be run on and they can use to make business investment decisions on is available to them. So as Yaakov said, ciphertext is in the database in those sensitive fields. It's never in plain text. And if that database were stolen or whatever, it's gibberish. And that's a huge, huge benefit for cloud security. So what I'd like to do at this point is show you our architecture in detail of how we've implemented this. We've integrated always encrypted into our architecture end-to-end. From the beginning to the end, including the user experience. And I'm going to walk over to the machines here and give you a little demo. So I'll start with a table in our financial services model. It's called DIM Investor. DIM Investor is a very straightforward table. It has investor name, sensitive information in it, social security number, tax ID numbers, things like that. And what we're going to do is we're going to go over to our data hub. Let's see, let me get the right one here. Okay. And what we're going to do is we are going to drop into, in our data hub, we have an area which we call file drop. So I mentioned we ingest data automatically from many sources. We also empower the investment manager to drop files for processing onto the data hub themselves in the file drop feature that we have. So I'm going to, let me close this here. I am going to take a file, and before I drop this file, I'm going to show you this file. So this file matches to the schema. It has investor sensitive information in it, a couple of names, tax ID numbers, phone numbers, things like that. I'm going to take this file, and I'm simply going to drop it onto the file drop. Okay. So this gets uploaded and it gets put in a point that wherein the ingestion of data will occur. Now, normally all of this is done automatically. What I'm going to do here is sort of tickle the system so that we can get the data processed more rapidly and not have to wait for anything to happen. So I'm going to kick off a job. And what this job does, it is going to take the file from the file drop, and it's going to run it through a series of cleansing and all of that. And it's going to take that the sensitive columns and encrypt them into the database. So this is a point where this is a job server. So this is an application. And this job server happens to have access to the master column encryption keys for this particular data hub. And we separate every data hub. Every data hub has its own column encryption keys, its own service account. So there's very, very tight separation between every client. We never commingle that data. We are a multi-tenant environment. So this has finished now, and now I'm going to come back over, and I'm going to run a query on this table. So there were three rows that came in, and from the SQL Server side, from a database administrator or an operator who runs a simple query on that table, this is what they see. They see ciphertext, but the fields, or I should say the columns, that were never encrypted and are not encrypted and are in the clear, remain in the clear. So this information has been ingested, it's in the table. Secondly, from our UI perspective, where the end users will see the information and see the reports, we also want to provide this information to those users. Well, we have actually, in our architecture, separated the end users into multiple role groups. So there is a identifiable information role group. And if you're a member of that, then you have the privileges to see that decrypted data. And we have a non-identifiable information role group. If you're a member of that, you're not allowed to see the decrypted data. You only can see the ciphertext. So these jobs are essentially, again, I'm tickling the system to just speed this up. Normally, this is all done automatically. They've both finished. And what these jobs are essentially doing is refreshing the analytic reports that are available on the web portal to the end users. So now I'm going to bring you over to show you what these reports look like. Now, I'm logged in, Paul Sturpe, I'm the CTO, and I have assigned myself higher privileges than our CEO, Subra. Unfortunately, he doesn't get to see the identifiable information, and I do. So we'll start with Subra's login. Subra's logged in over here, and he sees an investor report. So I will refresh this quickly.
So while Paul is pulling this, I know some of you in the audience actually wanted to do this scenario where you wanted some groups of user who has access to the encrypted, meaning the decrypted data, and some groups of user who will be able to see it, the ciphertext, but not the decrypted data. That's the scenario we are going through.
Right. And let me bring that back up. Sorry, I'm jumping around. So here is Subra's view of the world. What does he see? He essentially sees what's in the database. He sees ciphertext. However, the fields that are in plain text are freely available to him. In my case, where I am a member of the identifiable information role group, I can see everything decrypted. So this is obviously a more restricted group that enables different classes of users to access the data in different ways. And so this is an integration end-to-end from a user experience. I would like to show you one thing that I think is of interest to the audience here, and that is that this is what the script looks like to create this table. This is the SQL script to create this table. There's a process that one must go through. We must generate some keys, some certificates. And what we do here, if you look at this database SQL script, you'll see that the columns that are field level encrypted are encrypted with some syntax here using the column level encryption keys that are generated at the point, in our case, the job server, but it could be, for example, a cl- client machine sitting far away from SQL Azure, but for at which point the information is encrypted or decrypted. So it's not anywhere near the database server itself, which is very important. So this is sort of what it looks like.
Jakub, sorry to interrupt you. Jakub, is it really true what Paul is saying? Because that means we have no impact in the SQL Server machine to do the encryption and decryption. Is that right?
Absolutely. So the idea is that the database environment, SQL Server, or Azure SQL Database, it has never access to the keys. It doesn't decrypt, encrypt data. You need to, it is your responsibility to ensure that client applications, like in this case, it's Excel or Excel services, to be precise, somewhere in a financial fabric infrastructure, is doing a decryption of data, or the smart loader in case of encryption, that these two applications are provisioned, are configured to have access to the keys. The key that matters, that you care about here, is so-called master key. We have a hierarchy of keys. We have encryption keys, which is what Paul just showed you in that schema. So you decide which column is encrypted with each encryption key. Encryption key is a symmetric 256-bit random number. Now, it gets encrypted with what we call a master key. It's typically, let's assume for now, a certificate stored in the Windows certificate store. That's an asymmetric key. Now, what you store in the database is the encrypted column encryption key, okay? The product of encrypting that plaintext random number that is used for encryption with the master key. That what is stored in the database. So again, it's not a plaintext key, it's the encrypted encryption key. And you store information about the location of the master key. In this case, this will be a certificate. And when an application such as Financial Fabric Smart Loader needs to encrypt the data, the server sends the metadata about the keys to that application, including the location, the thumbprint of the certificate, which is what Paul is going to show you in a moment. And it uses this thumbprint to locate the master key and then to decrypt the encrypted column encryption key and then use that key to encrypt or decrypt the data exchange with the database, okay?
Right, and so I will show you very briefly this idea of how you permission a service account to the key so that it has the ability to decrypt or encrypt the information versus other service accounts which don't have access to the key and thus are not allowed to encrypt or decrypt the information, and thus you see it in CipherTest. Yes, there's a question. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's repeat the question, Paul. So
sure. Okay. Go ahead, Jakub.
Yeah. So the question is, if as we said, the client up, it seems like we have a requirement that the application needs to have access to the key every time, each application that needs to be able to operate on plaintext data, right? So therefore, if we want to onboard a new application or a new user on a different machine, for example, we need to make sure that application has access to the keys. So you're asking if this is the case, right? You want to take that, Paul? Or?
Sure. Okay. So the answer is, or the the distinction is that if the application needs the ability to encrypt and decrypt the information, then yes, it needs access to the key. However, if the application does not need and is a consumer of the ciphertexted results from SQL, it runs a select on a table, and and that user is not permitted to see the decrypted information, then it's not necessary. Mm-hmm. Any SQL query on a select table, there's no impact.
I want to add to that answer. So maybe what if I'm interpreting correctly your question, maybe there is a concern on the back of your head here, which is, okay, so if I have, let's say, thousands of machines hosting applications in my environment, How do I have to deploy this certificate? Let's say all of them need access to plaintext data. So do I need to deploy that certificate to each machine individually? So the answer is yes, if you decide to use certificates as column master key non-always encrypted. However, and there is, of course, a maintenance overhead and even nightmare if you don't have the right tools to deploy and manage these certificates across so many machines. However, we have some much more convenient, in this scenario, alternatives. So for example, you could choose to store your master key in Azure Key Vault, which is a central key store. And then all you need to do, you need to make sure, you need to grant permissions to your applications to access that key in Azure Key Vault. That's a solution that we in general recommend for Azure hosted applications. The other option, if you use SQL Server on premises, you could choose to use a networked HSM, hardware security module, is a special device for managing and containing secrets such as cryptographic keys. And you could then configure multiple machines in your environment to all of them to contact that central key repository. Then you don't have this problem of distributing, deploying that cert to very many places. Okay?
There is another question here.
So the question was, you have two questions, I suppose, right? So question number one was, is there any caching done, performed inside the application to minimize the number of round trips to a key store, if that key store, especially if it's remote, right? So the answer is yes. Now, what we really cache, and that might not be obvious or intuitive, what we cache are the values of plaintext column encryption keys. So the normal processing without forget caching for a moment, what happens is if the driver receives two pieces of data, to encrypt social security number or to decrypt a social security number, you need to first decrypt an encrypted column encryption key, which is this. And that's what the server sends to the driver. And by the way, it's encrypted with a master key, which is, let's say, in Azure Key Vault or a Windows Certificate Store in a networked HSM. So what the driver does, it contacts that key store, calling its API, prompting it to decrypt an encrypted column encryption key, and the result of that is a plaintext key. Now, that plaintext key is going to be cached. Okay, so that on the next query, when you try to perhaps insert another row to using Smart Loader, Financial Fabric Smart Loader to their data warehouse table, then that Smart Loader already, or driver inside it already has the plaintext CEK, and it doesn't have to go and prompt that key store to decrypt it, right? Now, especially in the newest version of the drivers, you have a control over this caching mechanism. You can set time to live and so on. So, of course, there is a trade-off here between security and performance, right? So the longer you cache it, the more exposed you are to various forms of attacks. Or on the other side, as you said, that what prompted your question, if you can choose to go to the key store every time, but that degrades your performance, okay?
So, okay. I'd like to show you very simply or very quickly what the permissioning mechanism is to permission, for example, the identity or a service account in this case, that in how it has access to the keys. So in our case, we have a dedicated service account for the data hub. We actually have two, one that is privileged on the master column encryption key and one that is not. And in this example, on the screen, we have MMC opened up. This is a certificate store. And we are going to, this is the master column encryption key is stored in this machine in certificate form. And we are going to, wrong one. We are going to show you how to permission essentially that identity on the certificate So in our case, the service account that has the ability to decrypt and encrypt the information in our architecture is added here to be provided read access to that certificate. And that is the primary action that needs to be done in order to give that service account access to the keys so that it has the ability to encrypt and decrypt. If it doesn't have read access to the certificate, that service account representing any identity that the application runs under would not have the ability to decrypt or encrypt the information, load data into the database, or extract the data from the database to have it in clear text. So I'd like to hand over to Subra and show you and ask him to walk us through a little bit in terms of the kind of rich analytics that one can have while still having identifiable information and secret information maintained in ciphertext.
So here we will go through a few of the analytics. So you can actually classify the analytics in three broad categories. One is you don't need access to the encrypted fields or fields which are identifiable information. The second would be you don't need to decrypt the identifiable fields because you can pivot on it by using the equality operator. And the third will be you do need to decrypt, which is the case Paul has shown, meaning if I need to see the investor name, then I need to decrypt. But you would see that 80 to 90% of the analytics which needs to be done on a day-to-day basis are aggregates. So they fall into the first two categories. I'll show you one of the detailed examples, like these are AUM growth, AUM by advisor. These are all done without actually decrypting the data. An interesting one will be profit and loss by advisor or profit and loss analysis. Let's go to this one and bring the screen bigger. Wrong one, here, AUM by tier. So here you can see that we have 6-7 different dimensions which are essentially operating on the individual account's data, such as who is the advisor for the account, who is the custodian for that account, what is the balance tier, which balance tier the account falls into, and of course the time series, meaning which what's the date. So I can see the aggregate of that without actually knowing the name or the social security number or tax ID of the investor. I can pick any advisor, let's say Barbara, and try to find out what's the breakdown of that. So those are the MIS which are important or which drives the business decision. Okay, Barbara is dealing with too many small accounts or maybe too many large size, only large sized accounts. We need to rebalance that. So those are some of the analytics which the wealth managers use on a regular basis, and that does not require knowing the name of the account, if that makes sense. So, Paul?
Sure.
I guess we need to switch.
Five. So that's the first part of the demonstration. The second very critical piece of this architecture, which is required in our architecture, is to utilize some other technologies that Microsoft provides. And you've heard the word quite a bit, I'm sure, during the conference or during the Ignite, the word hybrid. Many of us have on-prem environments and want to leverage those past services because they're so rich and put this stuff together. So as I mentioned, Financial Fabric has an on-prem, but our on-prem is actually on Azure, as VMs in Azure, but it would be the same thing as having it in some other co-location data center or whatever. And our smart loader, for example, is running on a virtual machine in Azure in our own Active Directory domain. But at the same time, it needs to be able to communicate to Azure SQL in a very secure way. So the SQL team has provided yet a new technology that is available now called Active Directory Authentication. And this is extremely important technology because it provides us with an enterprise class authentication mechanism for our applications to talk to Azure SQL. This is new, this is very important. Previously, we did not have this tool in our toolbox. What we had to do as application developers is we wanted to make a connection from a piece of application code to Azure SQL. We had to specify a user ID and a password. Well, that becomes a big problem. Now you've got a password written in a web config file, you've got it written in the registry, you've got it written somewhere. That's not a very good solution, and it's been something that has prevented us from going there. But with Active Directory authentication, we now have the power of like a Windows integrated authentication capability between on-prem and PaaS services. And this is an extremely powerful combination. How does that happen? How do you make that happen? There's some tooling that has to be done. We use some technologies that Microsoft provides. Again, we have Active Directory in our IaaS infrastructure. That has to communicate with Azure AD, and it has to federate. The word is federate. The tool that is used to federate is called Azure AD Connect. So you have to set this up, and there's a synchronization process that goes on. And the accounts on your on-prem environment, those identities, those credentials, well, I should say those identities, are synchronized and federated with Azure AD. And you have controls over which accounts you want to bring up and keep and replicate, I should say, in Azure AD, and which ones you do not. We also utilize Active Directory Federation services for our services. We're fully claims authentication based, and we use multi-factor authentication. So there's a combination of PaaS services and on-prem services that we put together and are able to make and interoperate in a very strong authentication mechanism that was not possible before Active Directory authentication. So at this point, I'd just like to show you a couple of those very briefly. So walking over back to my machine, I will bring us back to the SSMS UI that we had before. So this is our familiar table again. And I'm going to show you what it looks like with SSMS, for example, as just an example application, to connect to a SQL Azure database server. So we have these choices now. We had Windows authentication. Of course, that doesn't work to SQL Azure. We have SQL Server authentication. That does work with SQL Azure, but it requires that we write a password down, right? That's not very good. There's also something called Active Directory password authentication. That authentication mechanism also requires a password. And then there is Active Directory integrated authentication. No password required because there's a trust relationship between the on-prem and the PaaS services. And this opens up a huge opportunity to now leverage the wealth of PaaS services available, whether it be OneDrive or whatever Microsoft is coming out with. There's a point of integration now where you can leverage the on-prem environment. It can talk to and authenticate to and have access control to those PaaS services. So that is a really phenomenal thing that Microsoft has produced. The second thing I wanted to show to you, and which is extremely critical in our business, is the integration of multi-factor authentication. So in Financial Fabric, we have the ability and the required ability to authenticate with two-factor authentication. So I'm just going to type this in.
Did any of you use two-factor authentication using the Azure stack? Cool.
Okay. So at this point, I'm going to request a one-time password, which will be sent to my second factor of authentication, which is my cell phone. I will wait for a text message to come in, which will have a temporary password. I'm sure you're familiar with this kind of thing. This is extremely critical to the financial services business, and many applications and services out there do not have this very fundamental and important capability from a security perspective. And so I can come back to my data hub, and there I am. So that's multi-factor authentication. In the Financial Fabric Data Hub, integrated with Active Directory Federation, ADFS, and multi-factor authentication services, which are PaaS and IaaS services. So,
you gotta switch.
Sorry, yeah, let me switch, thank you. So where does this, what are the benefits to Financial Fabric from these two extremely important technological advances that the SQL team has built. We now can empower our clients to be truly data-driven businesses. They can share their data freely with our data scientists, their data analysts, their clients. It's a new world. It's a new game. And at the same time, they can keep and know that that information that is sensitive remains in ciphertext, remains sensitive. It also gives, I would say, another tool in the toolbox for a defense in depth strategy from a security perspective. As you can see, in our business, security is extremely important. We've architected our system from the ground up with that in mind at every step of the way. It allows us to have our operations people, the Microsoft Azure operations people, or anybody else who has access to the database, to not gain access, or makes it much more difficult for them to gain access to sensitive data. So that's a really extremely important gain. And finally, having Active Directory integrated authentication, we now have an enterprise strong authentication mechanism that we never had before. And this is an extremely important and useful technology for hybrid environments where you have an on-prem and leveraging those plethora of Microsoft PaaS services that keep coming and keep coming and keep coming.
So what's next? So there are a few things we would like to do and see from the Microsoft SQL team. One is, while right now we are managing the keys for our client for the Always Encrypted, we would actually like to give that responsibility to our clients themselves. So if you can think about from a service provider or ISV perspective, that puts us out of liability, because then the hedge fund managers or investment managers own their own key. Of course, some of them will still like us to manage, but they should have the ability to manage themselves. That's one area we would like to see improvements, or we would like to see abilities for us to do that. The second, of course, is, as you heard probably a few times today, that Always Encrypted supports indeterministic encryption equality, right? By which we can do a whole bunch of analytics, but we would like to see more and more operations supported, such as being able to sort greater than less than some of the statistical operations or computations maybe. Of course, homomorphic encryption promisably does that, but with a very high latency, and it's not practical. So either it's in the form of practical homomorphic encryption or something else that I leave up to Microsoft and the great team they have who are working on the Always Encrypted. But in some form, if we can do more computation on encrypted data as to decrypting it, then we can avoid the Panama Papers, avoid the Swift hack, avoid the cyber threat and cyber theft for the hedge fund managers.
Click is right up there.
Right. This is great. Thanks, Subra. Thanks, Paul. I think you guys are excited and looking forward to learn more. As far as you can be excited this time of the year, of the day after the long day and many sessions. But anyway, of course you can go to Financial Fabric website to learn more about Data Hub. I would like to highly encourage you to go and try Always Encrypted, experience it by yourself. We have a sample at GitHub. We have a tutorial and many other resources, including resources on other technologies that Paul and Subra mentioned, AD authentication and TD and other things. SQL Server 2016 and Azure SQL Database 2016, especially this is the release that has unprecedented amount of investments in security. from the perspective, you know, of the last decade or so in the history of SQL, and we have exposed the majority of the same of these features in Azure SQL Database as well. So yeah, I would like to highly encourage you to go and try that. Joachim, would you like to add anything? Okay.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question to Paul and Subra. So great to see you guys are really using this technology. Do you have any advice for the folks in the room who are sort of looking at Always Encrypted and maybe see the benefit, but it seems like it's a daunting thing to get started on? What's your take on how do you evaluate, how do you get started, what are some of the gotchas? Any advice for the folks in the room here on that?
So I'm pretty sure, Yahim, that Paul and I will have two completely different answers. So that's the first disclaimer. My answer is, it's the best thing you guys have ever done because it enabled us to store the most sensitive data in the financial services industry on Azure or on the Azure cloud. And from an end user perspective, it's very, very transparent, meaning if you think about from an analytics perspective, we are using a whole bunch of stacks such as SQL Server Analysis Services, Excel Web Access. We didn't have to write any code or change any code such that we could do the analytics on that. The only piece of code we did is in our loader, we are enabling Always Encrypted. It's totally transparent from a driver perspective. Now, Paul, I'm sure, will say that there were some pain points which, you know, Jakub and team helped us go through. Would you like
to? Well, so we've been working together with Jakub and the team for quite a while, and it's been a fantastic partnership and a great learning experience. Sure, there are little gotchas here and there to make it work end-to-end, and particularly to integrate it into your architecture like we did into our architecture. It's a non-trivial exercise, but the actual technology itself is pretty easy to use and pretty straightforward. So you just got to figure out those little points of service accounts and whether they have access to the keys and creating keys. There's a couple of steps and permissioning and whether you need to be federated with an on-prem and pass, and, you know, if you're using PaaS services, whether that's necessary or not. The technology is available if you're totally on-prem on SQL 2016, and of course it's available on Azure SQL. I will agree with Subra with one of his first comments. So is, and I feel very strongly, and I think you can tell, and that this is a really a game changer. People complain all the have complained all of the time about not going to the cloud because my data is not secure. This is a game changer. This changes that discussion now. You have tremendous control now over that, and so it's really very important technology. And we're lucky to have worked with this team so well and get it into our architecture. It's just been a fantastic experience, and we think we've got a great answer for our clients.
Thank you. Okay.
Any other questions or?
Yes. Yes, please.
So I guess my question would be, how did you, do you envision this primarily as a hybrid solution? Because I noticed you were using ADFS and you had your own Active Directory stuff on-prem. Do you ever imagine it going completely cloud, or do you think that the security layers that you're able to build in by having it hybrid is better in your case?
See, we need you as our CTO. I would like to go completely cloud, but I have the wrong person, Paul. I'm just kidding.
I'm the details guy here, so.
No, but it's a great question. So at a business level, we would like to go completely on Azure, more and more platform as services. There is a little bit of history in terms of where we started. We had on-prem technology, and we are in the process of moving it. But and Paul will probably add the technical details of it, but I don't see any reason for you to use Always Encrypted. You can do it totally on Azure or totally on-prem or hybrid. It's probably fair to say that you have seen a hybrid architecture in the context of our business. That's what we needed. But depending on your use case, it could be one or the other or hybrid. There is no restriction from a technology perspective. But we were able to do it in a hybrid architecture, especially with Always Encrypted, as well as the SQL Azure authentication, the whole Active Directory integration, it shows that that's probably one of the most complex scenario. If you have one or the other, it would be a simpler one.
Yeah, it is a complex scenario. Your initial question is, can I do this all in pass? The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. There's no reason, nothing holding you back to just, if you're starting with pass services today, you could start and use it with, in fact, it's easier to go all pass, much easier. Okay.
Yes, please.
I didn't.
Could you repeat?
The question is whether we adopt a crypto framework on the client side. Is this the question from the application standpoint, or are you asking how we implemented it inside the driver? So let me clarify: the application doesn't interact with any crypto libraries at all. Right. Okay, all that is taken care of by the driver, ADO.NET in this case, that encrypts, decrypts the data on the fly. So yeah, internally, sure, yes, we rely on the existing APIs that already existed in .NET framework, you know, and by the way, this technology is also supported in ODBC and JDBC and these drivers we use equivalents of what we did in ADO.NET. So we use some crypto libraries that are either have native APIs in the case of ODBC or available in Java SDK in the case of Java.
Maybe you want to come up to the microphone? I'm having a little trouble hearing.
So Azure Write Management System has some encryption function, I think. So this will be the option of Azure Write Management System.
A management system?
Yeah, I feel it. So
to manage the keys, or I'm sorry.
I mean, the beauty of using Always Encrypted is that you don't have to deal with the encryption libraries or managing your keys yourself. You're essentially relying on the Always Encrypted to do that, and they have done it at the driver level. Mm-hmm. So other than creating the certificate and managing that aspect of it, the rest of the encryption technology, when it is getting encrypted, is not done by us at all. That's what makes it very, very transparent for the application and no requirement to change the code if you already have existing code. Yeah. Essentially, you are just turning on a configuration pretty much. Make sense?
Okay. I think only one. So Azure Arbitrage now don't have client-side encryption function. I think this SQL Server's function is the only solution of client-side encryption, I think. So this will be for Microsoft products, the first step for client-side encryption solution. I feel so. This is my comment.
So yeah, I think so. Let's put it this way: in the financial fabric architecture, we did not, other than writing a little bit more SQL syntax to identify which columns are sensitive, we did not write a line of code to implement. We did think through the architecture and decide what identities need to be created, what things need to be permissioned on certificates. You know, we think through our architecture end to end, but we did not have to program anything. All of it is transparent under the covers, in the drivers, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. So no other questions, looks like, so thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.